Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. Coming up, we'll be hearing about the devastating rise of blackgrass on tillage farms and rising levels of TB. But first, many of you will be aware that there has been an increase in pet ownership during the pandemic. Unfortunately, some of these new four-legged friends have been left to roam unchecked around the countryside. And I spoke to our correspondent, Niall Herson, who explained what impact of groups of dogs are having on farms.
I'm joined by Niall Herson now. Niall, you have been covering all things related to dog attacks and sheep thefts. I suppose, could you tell us just what's been going on around the country?
Yeah, so attacks on sheep really has been coming to focus now the past couple of weeks. Farmers are reporting a lot more dogs in the country and more just a problem with careless owners, more so than anything else. What they've noticed now is sheep worrying and dog attacks are on the up this year. We were speaking to dog owner or sheep owners down in Wicklow who are describing varying levels of attacks, from cases where a dog's running after a couple of sheep and might lead to sheep miscarrying or just general levels of worriedness, to even more severe levels where the farmer themselves getting attacked by the dog while trying to separate the dog from the sheep. So no, farmers are describing varying levels of attacks, but more increased instances of attacks across the board.
And why? What's thinking there? Why are there these increased incidences?
Yeah, so we were talking to dog breeders as well recently, and they're also describing an increase in price for dogs, but also just the demand for dogs is skyrocketed. You've just normal members of the public looking to purchase dogs, where in the past they might have never had one previously due to COVID. They've time on their hands now to look after a pet and to even just for a distraction for themselves to bring them out for walks. So then the farmers are thinking there's a lot more careless dog owners in the country now as a result of this, and they might not just be aware that dogs have to be kept on leads if they're around livestock, and just make sure they're kept safe at night to keep sheep safe also.
I've been talking to a couple of farmers on this, and the scale of the attacks are pretty atrocious, because it's not just if they kill sheep, it's even the worrying of sheep, especially before lambing there. You could have had sheep that would have aborted, you could have had sheep that were so stressed that they die from their injuries afterwards. I mean, do you have any kind of farm examples where you've spoken to farmers about the impact that these attacks have?
Yes, we spoke to Arian Delaney. That's another Wicklow farmer. He described a dog attack back in November, and 8 ewes were actually killed in the attack. But when it came to lambing time in February, he described the most difficult lambing of his farming career, with more miscarriages leading up to the lambing, to ewes presenting their lambs incorrectly. He really summed up the devastation that a dog attack can have down the line, not even just on the day. Like the full effects of the attack mightn't be felt until lambing itself.
And what are, say, organizations like the IFA or what are farmers doing in response to this?
Yes, the IFA brought out a really strong campaign recently, banning all dogs from farmland, all dog walkers to be prevented access to farmland, in an effort to try and stop these attacks. So there are no dogs allowed campaign. It's been ongoing for the past 3 or 4 weeks now. Other farm organisations are describing some of their members' worries in relation to dog attacks. But it seems as if the problem is ongoing for the minute anyway.
And there's more on that story in the paper. Well, TB has been a long-running issue for farmers in Ireland. And last year, the number of reactors was on the rise again. I spoke to Barry Cassidy about the situation.
Barry, the latest figures for 2020 are out and they're not good, are they?
No, we've been hearing all through last year that there has been a significant deterioration in the level of TB in the country. And I guess the provisional figures that we've seen have confirmed that. We're seeing an incident rate now of 4.3%, which I suppose it means basically for every herd tested in the country last year, 4.3% of them had at least one reactor. And I guess for comparison purposes, last year or 2019, it was 3.7%. It's certainly the first time it's been over 4% in a decade, which is quite a significant rise, despite the amount of money that's being spent on the programme. I mean, for farmers, it means that 4,600 farms were locked up last year. And for any farm that's been through a TB breakdown, they know how significant and how cumbersome that can be. And it also means that 23,000 cattle were condemned with TB last year. And that's a significant rise on the five-year average from the year previous of 16,800. So it's up 40%. And I guess it all just points to we're going to see more significant action in this area, because despite everything and despite all the years that TB has been around and that the program has been around, incidence and disease levels are going the wrong way.
Yeah, I guess one of the standout figures for me in what you wrote is that, you know, that, like you said, the five-year average or the annual average is 16,800, but last year was the first time it really did shoot up to, I think, 23,000 reactors. So that was bad news, we could say. I mean, could you just kind of break it down a little bit in terms of what counties were the worst affected?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned there, like, it's the first time we've seen over 20,000 reactors. And look, I guess all that will depend on the animal that goes down. But for someone maybe in a dairy herd who loses cows to TB, that's a significant hit for a farm. For someone on a pedigree operation, I mean, you just can't replace those genetics. But if we look on the counties, then we look across, I guess there's two areas that stood out to me. And that was Munster and also the Northeast. So if we take just Munster for an example, looking at Cork, and Cork is a massive county and there is a massive number of herds there, so that does have to be borne in mind when looking at these.
The most dairy cows in Ireland, yeah, go on.
Yeah, but more cows than the entire north of Ireland combined in a single county. So, but 3,000 reactors in the north of Cork alone, and that's the highest of any region or county, I guess, up 50% on 2019. And then if you add in the numbers from Cork South, it's a further 1,000. So, I mean, that's 4,000 cattle in one county alone. Going to the neighbouring Tipperary, which is also, again, a county with a significant both dairy and suckler herd, you're looking at an explosion of numbers is the only way you could describe it in the south of Tipperary. Up 200% from a very insignificant number of 377 in 2019 to 1,100 in 2020. Like, that is a massive change for those farms. And then when you add in the north of the county, which traditionally would be the side of the county that suffered worse from TB, you're adding in another 1,300 reactors. You know, that they're massive, massive numbers. And then even in the likes of Limerick, it's doubled to 1,200. In Kerry, there's another 1,000-odd. And Clare then, you know, which again has been under these high impact plans, you know, that's supposed to control
the black spot areas. Yeah,
I mean, there's still 1,500 cattle there, and they've been beyond the 1,000 mark for a long, long time now at this point with no sign of change. And then the northeast, you know, there's the usual suspects of Cavan and Monaghan and Meath as well, but interestingly this year Westmeath has now also entered that category, so there's a nice cluster there.
Neighbours of you and neighbours of me, I think, have all been complaining about this. But one thing that you do find farmers talking about a lot is the cost of TB. So in terms of the spending that's still going on TB, what are the figures there?
I mean, if we look at a national level, it's quite staggering, really. Last year, there was almost 100 million spent on TB. And I mean, that's just an eye-watering figure in any realm or in any disease control program. But when you consider that that's been going on now for years, you know, they were talking out to 2030, it's going to be €1 billion we'll spend on this disease. And that's not even to eradicate it. That's just controlling it at this level. And if we look at the three most significant costs in TB are testing the animals, paying the vets to do that, compensating farmers who have reactors, and then obviously the staffing costs in the Department of Agriculture as well. So testing last year, you know, you're talking almost 40 million, with farmers footing the most of that bill, at nearly 30 million of it, and the department picking up the rest. And then compensation has obviously risen in line with reactors, but I guess farmers aren't drawing out as much compensation as they're paying in on TB. So I guess it is farmers that are being hit the hardest and hit the worst on this. And because of our issues with disease levels, the European Union has started to withdraw funding. And that's going to add an extra cost to the Exchequer and really push the need for further and probably more severe action, really, to control this disease. And we've seen that hinted in the new TB strategy, although there is some working groups there that have to meet together and come up with the actual finer details of what it will mean for farms.
Right, so we might see a repeat of the IFA burning letters or burning something else from the department in the weeks to come. Okay, Barry, thank you very much for that.
No worries.
Barry Cassidy there. Stay tuned because we'll be back just after this.
Is the new rep scheme being oversold? For more in your Farmer's Journal, here's Paul Mooney.
Pressure mounts on government to deliver on reps promised to farmers. Beef prices on the rise as factories forced to pay more to get cattle. TB reactors surged by almost 40%. And are you an Ulster Bank customer? Our money mentor offers updates and advice on what to do.
Plus, don't miss the final part in our series on passing on the family farm inside this week's Irish Farmers Journal, on sale now.
Now, have you heard of blackgrass? I confess that when I first came to the Farmers Journal, I had no idea what it was. But for tillage farmers across Ireland, it is a serious issue that is getting more serious every year. Our tillage expert, Stephen Robb, has this report on the subject.
Stephen Robb here with the Irish Farmers Journal. I'm joined again by Jimmy Staples, Enable Conservation Project Manager with Chagas. Jimmy, it's week two of our blackgrass campaign, and this week it's focusing on the first of the IPM, Integrated Pest Management Control Strategies, which we're going to delve into, and that is spring cropping. You have an article in this week's Farmers Journal on why spring cropping is particularly suited to battling blackgrass. Just explain to our listeners why switching to spring cropping, how will that help prevent or tackle the problem of blackgrass if you have it in your land?
Hi, Stephen. Yeah. Well, I suppose when we talk about blackgrass, we know it's an autumn germinating grass weed, and we know that roughly 80% of it will germinate in the autumn. So what you're doing by switching to spring cropping, you're sort of doing two things. You're giving yourself an opportunity to allow for a number of different flushes over the course of the autumn time in order to reduce the level of weeds that are in the seed bank. And then you're also sowing in that sort of in the springtime when less black grass is going to emerge.
Okay, so I have a field infested with black grass at the moment. It's traditionally a winter cereal field as such, bread crop every now and again. If I switch to spring cropping, you're saying that I can get in multiple times, maybe over the winter, to try and get a flush, to try and make a stale seed bed. Is that the strategy?
Yeah, exactly. So depending on the weather conditions, I suppose reports from the UK now would say that maybe after harvest, if you leave the initial flush for the blackgrass to germinate itself, especially where you have sufficient moisture, so don't go in and cultivate straight after the combine, just let the blackgrass emerge itself, depending on if it's after winter wheat or winter barley, I suppose, depending on the timing. And then after that, then once you get that initial flush, you can go in and maybe till again. You know, cultivation depth is very important. You want to be doing 5 centimeters is an absolute maximum. Try and go shallower if you can, and allow for your second flush and maybe your third flush. this will allow you to use glyphosate to clean up that and to kill off any of those emergent seedlings. Again, you shouldn't let the flushes go too strong, but it shouldn't be too bad at that time of the year. And then what you do then, you can go in and you obviously you can sow your spring barley crop in the springtime, depending on maybe, you know,
Yeah, so just on spring crop and choice, I mean, would switching to a break crop, a non-cereal, not be the natural choice or the smartest option in this scenario?
Yeah, I suppose that would be what your initial thoughts would just probably be drawn to a break crop. And again, it comes back to what you know about the blackgrass population that you're dealing with. So if you know that your blackgrass population can be controlled using the specific herbicides that you might use in a crop of spring beans, for instance, then that is a viable option. It's a risk to take because if you don't know enough about that population, there is unfortunately a very high probability that it's possibly resistant to those herbicides. And because spring beans would be sown, say, at wider spacings, it's very uncompetitive, you're just going to make your blackgrass situation worse. So if that was the case, I'd be more inclined to go with spring barley because it's highly competitive. If you can sow it in sort of that mid to late March period before the blackgrass would start to germinate in the spring, you allow the crop to get up and it'll get away and get established before the blackgrass would start to become, say, competitive and start to compete. And then also by increasing your seeding rates, especially where you might have maybe the ground is a little bit, if it's winter ground and it's that little bit heavier, and you might expect maybe a lower establishment percentage of your spring barley, going with higher seeding rates will help to increase that competition and reduce the impact that whatever black grass does emerge during the springtime.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering, so then in terms of establishment techniques for your spring crop, I mean, should you be trying to reduce tillage as much as possible, or should you be blowing it down?
It sort of depends on what it's not that straightforward in some respects. Like if you have had blackgrass for a number of years and it's true to soil profile, at that stage, or if you've encountered blackgrass for the first time, start there. Plowing is probably the best thing, because what you're going to do is you're going to bury the seeds that have been freshly shed, and if you plow them down to 10 centimeters or whatever it is, you should have very little emergence of blackgrass coming in the springtime. Whereas if you have, you know, where you've already got maybe blackgrass built up in the seed bank, no-till might be a better option. Because you're not disturbing the soil, and you're not moving blackgrass into a situation where it wants to germinate, you know, with a flash of light or with more moisture getting down to the seed. So it really depends on your situation. I couldn't give you a blanket what's best. It really depends on your situation.
So I suppose for some of the guys who are dealing with blackgrass really for the first time this year, because we've seen such a big increase in 2020, you know, one strategy I guess is switch to spring cropping and then plow it down deep in the spring, and then maybe we'll plow shallower for the following years then.
Yeah, you could plow shallower. I'd be inclined to not plow, so plow deep and probably maybe try and switch to very shallow cultivations or even sort of a no-till situation to try and leave that blackgrass down there, because it has a fairly relatively short lifespan when it's buried deep. You know, you're looking at maybe 75-80% reduction in the amount of seeds that are viable year on year. And like within 4 to 5 years, you should be looking at very, very low population blackgrass surviving, you know, from that initial plowing. So you might, you know, you could be looking at maybe plowing once every 4 to 5 years.
Okay, excellent. Well, look, Jimmy, that was a good conversation and some practical advice. And look, we'll be having many more of them as the year goes on. But I think we both felt that it was important to get the spring cropping message out there just before the spring sowing campaign, I suppose. So look, thank you for your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
No problem. Thanks, Stephen.
And that's it for this week. Thank you very much for tuning in. And remember that Farm Tech Talks will be out on Friday evening. I'm Hannah Quinn Mulligan, and the sound engineer was Claire Nash.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.